And welcome to another episode of Dying to Meet You. And today I have a dear friend here, and I wanted to share a lot more about his journey and how this young man sitting here have decided to actually pre-plan his own farewell. And I thought it would be great to invite him to share with us a little bit about himself, and not only that, about the work that he does. Hi, I'm Anjali May, and I'm dying to meet you. So here we have Kelvin. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. Yes. So Kelvin, maybe you can let the listeners and the viewers understand a little bit more. What do you do?
I am an art therapist working in a local hospice. So I'm part of a clinical team that supports family members and their loved ones who have been diagnosed with life-limiting conditions.
Can you explain a bit about hospice, because some or palliative care, what do you do and who are the patients that checks into hospice?
Hospice care and palliative care is used interchangeably in Singapore. So a lot of the work that the team does, it's symptom management. So symptoms, when we describe symptoms, we are thinking of the concept of a total pain, total care. So what do I mean by that? The hospice is a very team-based approach. So we do identify different aspects of pain in a person, namely physical pain, psychological pain, spiritual pain, and social pain. So there's four main aspects, and because there's so many things to deal with, so we need an entire team. So different clinicians will be dealing with different aspects of the pain. So we do come together as one entire team to support the family and the patients.
Yeah, it's not easy, because I met so many people in the palliative care, social workers, and often they tell me, "Hey, Anjali, I cannot do what you do." And then I tell them, no, I cannot do what you guys do. Because the way you work with all the patients and family, it is a journey. It's, you can go through months, weeks, or even years, right? So, but for my job, it's usually a 5 days affair or 7 days at most. We carry, you know, we pass the care from your hands to our hands, but we never have that kind of what you guys have, which is the deep connection with a lot of family members. So how do you deal with it for yourself?
I do think that the way I see it, it's like how the African proverb, it talks about it takes a village to raise a child. So I also see it on the other end of the spectrum, it takes a village to send somebody off. So I don't think that our work is very different. We are just a bit earlier than you. And it takes everyone to really come together to honor a life.
Yeah.
And a lot of time, I'm also wondering, you know, when I'm journeying with someone, when will it be my turn? Because I think mortality is something that do come up very often when you journey with someone who has a life-limiting condition. I think, I mean, last I checked, death rate is 100%, so it's something that everybody will need to face at some point.
And everybody should pre-plan, right? To talk about it at least.
Yeah. Or at least think about it, because I think it's a form of caring for your loved ones. It's a different kind of showing, a different way to show love, in my opinion.
You know, I absolutely agree with you, because, you know, we always have this saying, 生老病死. Yeah, it's 人生必经之路. You know, you are born, you 生老, and then you go old, you fall ill, and then you pass away. But in the palliative care, just like my work, you know, we don't just take care of people who passed away. We take care of the people, we don't just take care of the older people. We also take care of the younger people who has passed away. So what has this kind of experience, and how long have you been an art therapist and working in this space? And what's your lessons learned from the job that you do?
I have been working in a CC hospice for about five years now. And I will always tell people that every patient you meet, they are the best teachers, because they are coming to you, or you meet them at a point in time when their life is about to consolidate to a point. So there's always life lessons to learn. I remember this elderly gentleman, he was sharing with me in Chinese when I was asking him, is he worried about dying? So he very candidly was describing to me, 早走啊，有人送；迟走有人接。
哦，迟走有人接，早走有人送。嗯、so if you pass away young, there will be people who send you off、嗯、for the funeral.
Yeah.
迟走有人接。So if you pass away later, there will be someone else who will be receiving you from the other
yes.
end. Wow, beautiful.
So even removing the whole faith concept altogether, I think that itself presents a very cyclical and human, very human or secular understanding about
a person.
Death and dying.
Yeah.
About how we are all interconnected and whether you are living now or living later.
Yeah. So what's your experience like, because you are an art therapist, can you share a little bit more about, you know, what is a typical day for you?
Well, I go to work, I need coffee to be a better
Would
person.
Would you like some?
I'm good today. So early in the morning, depending on the days, because sometimes when, there are some days where we have art therapy groups, where we actually get the chance to bring patients out from the inpatient unit, and then they will actually come together to make art. So that is also one form of community engagement, like a social engagement, not community engagement. Social engagement where family members also get to join in. So through these sessions, we also are able to support family members together with patient themselves. Sometimes when staff walk past, we will also invite them into the space. So I think it art itself allows this sense of cohesion and normalcy. Because sometimes in a medical setting, it's very difficult to really feel like you are a person because everything is very medicalized, the language. But I think in palliative care, even the setting itself, the way people present themselves to each other, we try to alleviate that. But I think art can add another layer because the sense of independence and choice that you can make. So some days it will start with a group, some days it will start with seeing patients by the bedside, and afternoons sometimes there are groups, sometimes there are meetings, because meetings are important in this context, because the whole team, the whole clinical team will actually come together to share and discuss about case management of the patients and the family members. So I think this is also a time where we can each step up and step in lah, depending on the needs that's being presented. So palliative care doctors, for example, they are trained to also facilitate conversations among the team members to really identify, you know, certain needs and who is the best person to be taking the lead in certain aspects of the care. So I do think that the team-based approach is time and time again being brought forth to the service.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy because team management, and then also how do you guys, you know, work with each other, because different patients have different needs. And I don't think it's just patient, even the family members. Because I heard this before, that people who are going through palliative care or in the hospice, sometimes patients are ready to plan or talk about how they want to go, but parents or family members are not. And then sometimes family members would like to know, but the patient is not ready. So do you all have you know, someone to facilitate? Because I believe this is a space that you all will be exposed to almost every day.
I believe from my experience and my understanding, the social workers are helming this arena and they are very good at whatever they're doing, because their relationship building with families, their relationship building with patients themselves, and a lot of them are very experienced in managing
that
interpersonal relationships.
I see.
Yeah, so sometimes our role is really just to divide and conquer. So sometimes the social worker would be maybe tackling or supporting family members, then we will take on the role of supporting patients and vice versa.
Oh wow.
So that's why I think open communication is very important. And sometimes when we do identify needs from patient themselves or from family members, like for example some wishes, like they want to create memories together, or there are family flying in from overseas. So these kind of things, and then we'll try to come together to plan something. Like right now as we are speaking, some colleagues of mine, like a music therapist and art therapist and a social worker, they are actually in the middle of organizing a lunch reunion, like a lunch
get together.
I don't remember, is it a buffet or a wedding, not a birthday or a wedding anniversary for a couple.
Oh, that's lovely.
So it's really a team effort, and I also remember that my art therapy colleague is putting together a gift, like a surprise from the wife to the husband who's the patient.
Oh, understand.
Yeah, and there's all these different aspects that really come together to support one. We call it like a family unit. Family being like the patient and their loved ones.
Oh, wow.
So it's really work that cannot be done by one person. So that's why, I mean, going back to the team-based approach, I think this is one of the uniqueness in healthcare.
I see, yeah. So yeah, you know, Kelvin, maybe you can share a little bit more, like, because we have a common patient who, her name is Aggie, and she was the reason that you helped her with, I remember at her funeral, she actually told me what she wanted, and it was a calligraphy of a Xing Xing. So I just wanted to check, like, you know, how do you decide what works for a certain patient, like what therapy will you suggest? Is it painting? Is it shufa artwork? How do you decide for the patients or propose?
I think in the context of Aggie, I mean, I'm also glad she has given consent for us to, you know, after her death, to share about her story. So I think for her it's very unique, because a lot of time when we meet someone, we don't really know what they like or what they are more inclined to. So a lot of time it's about trying to navigate what is around them first and try to meet them where they are. So I remember when Aggie was first introduced to me by the ward doctor, it was about trying to support this myriad of emotions facing death and dying. Mainly also because she is relatively young and she's a very, very high achiever.
She is.
A very high flyer, not high achiever, sorry, very bad wrong choice of word. She's a very high flyer in her career. She's achieved so much for herself.
She has two masters.
Yes. And she's a very highly intelligent lady, very eloquent. So there's so many aspects of her, and then there's this disease.
Yeah.
So we were caught in, when I say we, as in the music therapist, myself and physiotherapist, I think three of us work quite closely together. So when we were supporting her, it was really about trying to help her maintain her best form in terms of her mental and physical. So when I was there, I remember the first one of the first few conversations she was sharing with me about her anger, that her spouse don't really understand what she's going through. So a lot of it is about validating this emotions. And also how her world has been into chaos upon receiving this diagnosis, which came unexpectedly. So that was the first encounter with her. But I also found out that she has hunger for creativity because she has this paint by numbers in her room that she really wanted to finish. So I take that for an example. That itself is something that she can do on her own.
Yeah.
So I would not actually continue to build on the payment numbers as an art therapy directive. Because she also mentioned that this is something she wants to do on her free time.
I see.
So that is also trying to meet her where she is and what she wants.
Yeah.
So as we continue the conversation, I also found out about her faith orientation. And she also used to recite the Heart Sutra. But more importantly, this question about what is going to happen next, about the impermanence of life. So one of the earlier sessions, I was wondering how can I bring the topic or to just really discuss about death and dying with her, or about the impermanence of life. So I remember, because my background is in fine art, so I remember this Taiwanese artist Tai Jiawei, she has done a series of work where she writes Heart Sutra on ephemeral materials, like on the lotus leaf, on incense, on tree barks, on tofu. So I thought maybe I should try bringing in contemporary art into the space via pictures.
Okay.
So I introduced Cai Jiawei's work to Aggie, and then the conversation itself spin towards her curiosity of wanting to revisit writing the Heart Sutra as a form of caring for herself, as a form of slowing down. Yeah. Because she's so popular, actually, to meet her, I need to schedule in advance.
I know!
She has this schedule, this timetable,
yes.
So you need to book a slot just to go in and see her. And then after that, the next visitor comes, you have to leave.
Yes!
So I'm just glad I managed to get the slot in to really just have this introduction to how we can possibly keep her engaged at her own time. So that it's also not necessary for me to be there if she wish, so that she can still attend to herself when she needs. So how do I know what works? I really don't, because when I go in, it's ringing like an open book.
Sure.
I will try to prepare as much as I can, but half the time it won't work because they will tell you what they want.
Yeah.
But so I think a lot of time is really just to spend time and listen about what's important for the person. So Aggie, she's very articulative, so she will actually tell you at some point that what she needs and what works for her.
Yeah.
So I think when that started, I also invited a colleague who knows how to activate the singing bowl, because I tried a few times, like I just can't get it started.
Is it William?
It was...
It's not the guy.
Jay was one of my therapy aid colleagues. So
I see.
He practices using that on his own. So I invited him into the space. So during the session, I think Aggie was really just writing the Heart Sutra and then in a very calm state. Mm. So I remember that session very clearly, because the way she talks, the vocal projection did change after the session. It's noticeably a lot calmer.
Wow.
Yeah, we started in the morning, that session was over an hour.
Wow.
And part of her physio goals is also, her goals in the physiotherapist is also to sit out for a good period of time. So I think sometimes with chances like that, we will overlap our treatment goals.
Mm.
So to get her out of bed,
yep.
So she gets to sit outside, and then she gets to do calligraphy writing.
I see.
It's very customizable.
Yeah.
So we do try to communicate as much as we can as a team, so that we overlap our services and meet them where they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was also the music therapist involvement.
Sure.
So
yes,
I think
as
we move forward, I found out that Aggie started to write songs with my music therapy colleague. And there was actually this session that wasn't planned, that my music therapy colleague, she just came in and then wanted to check with Aggie, you know, the finalized lyrics of the song.
Yes.
And it was also when we started talking about her funeral. Like, because she wrote this song actually for her funeral, for like a surprise, right?
Correct.
For her guests. And then we were toying with the idea, you have the song, but they don't have the lyrics.
Mm.
So maybe do you want to
you
know, present the lyrics to them in a way of your choice? And because of the nature of the song, there was a line in the lyrics that we can actually materialize into something like brown paper packages from Lazada,
yes,
instead of our tatami strings. So we actually plan towards the direction and package song lyrics for the attendees at her funeral, because that time it was also during COVID period, so there was a headcount limitation. Which also means we are able to physically make the 30 pieces for her.
Yep.
So I think that also serves as a form of culmination on my end as a therapist.
Wow.
It's a different kind of self-care.
Mm,
like a goodbye on my end to her.
It's very well done. I remember that pack. Because we give it out at a funeral. So a lot of you who probably haven't caught up with the story about Aggie, I did share with her in some of the podcast episodes. So Aggie is, I happened to pick up a call, and it was by the sister who called me to ask me about bio-urn plant. And when I ask her more questions like, oh, who are you planning for? She said, oh, my sister, who hasn't passed away, but she's interested to find out more. So then when I ask, oh, would she be open to speak to me? And they say, okay, let me ask her. So I finally got an appointment. Yes, she's very busy. I got an appointment on the following Monday, right? So the minute I went in, because the attending doctor knew her, and she's the one who's taking care. So I know the doctor. She was like, oh, you've got to meet this patient. She's really cool. But of course, she didn't disclose her name. So when I arrived there, and she's like, oh my God, so you are who? The doctor who has been telling me about the funeral director. So it's like, you know, immediately all walls are down. And she's so bubbly, super bubbly. So there she is sitting, lying on the bed, but still full of energy, you know. And then you have like the two sisters and husband sitting next to her bed. And we started talking about the funeral plan. It was about 3 hours. I spent about 3 hours because she has a, I have to take note of the appointment timing. Because she was like, okay, I have one more timing, next person. Because I remember when I arrived at the hospice, I have to wait outside because the one before me is still in the room.
So
you need to take queue, and she's popular than a doctor. So then I waited for about 10, 15 minutes, had some small talks with the sister just to size up what's her comfort level to talk about farewell. Because a lot of times when I do that, I also want to know what is their state of mind, just so that I know what to present to them. But you know, the minute I went in, yeah, she's ready. She was like, yeah, tell me then, what should I do? And she's super bubbly. There were like paintings in the room. So the Sing Sing Heart Sutra was her instructions to me that, oh, please make sure you display it at the funeral wake. So that was the calligraphy that she did. And then she gave me very specific instructions because I keep asking her questions, like even ask her, who do you want to dress? Would you like your husband to help dress you to your final outfit? And then I remember she looked over at her husband and like, hey, you want to dress me or not? And then, you know, the husband is the, nope, I will let the professional take care of you. So it's very cute, yeah, the dynamics. And then towards the end, I asked her if she wanted to do a video recording or a voice recording. So video recording, she didn't want it because at that point in time, she already have a big lump on her face. And she was like, no, I don't want video, but I don't mind voice recording. So I told her, like, you can give me however number of recordings you would like to record and then give it to me. Don't give it to your family. So I have the copy and you tell me what and when you want to play it. So she gave me three. I think one was the song that you just mentioned. So that was the song I think the art therapist sang for her with the lyrics.
Music therapist.
Yeah, a music therapist. Yeah, sorry. And then, and that's Trudy for you. And then there was another song that she sang herself, Aggie sang herself. But you can actually hear she was like breathless, but yet she managed to complete the song. And I remember that was like the debut, you know, when I was the funeral celebrant for her funeral. I said, oh, this is the first time this song is ever played, so it's the debut. So I remember playing it and everybody just clapped after the performance. Okay, and the last one, the last video voice recording, she said, oh, Angelie, when everyone is about to leave the funeral hall, the service hall, I want you to play this, right? So you know the very hilarious message to everybody. So I remember everyone walked out of the funeral that day, the service hall, very, you know, inspired by this lady who has impacted their life, who has touched their life. And so many people came to me and were like, oh my God, that was a beautiful, that's how she wanted it. And I think I can, yeah, very proudly say I was her funeral director because I did the way she wanted it. So, and then it was much later I realized, oh, Kelvin was the art therapist that actually, you know, encouraged her to do the Heart Sutra. So I think she really had taken a lot of benefits. I think not just, you know, in even the family members, they share about their experience having to go through this very difficult journey, but your team actually really helped them to go past and you know, this very difficult and challenging journey for them. So has Aggie's, you know, message impacted you or made you live life differently?
I think it's really the encounter that made me realize what can be done in a funeral. Mm. And I think she is one of the many individuals that I've crossed paths with that really make me rethink what do I want for my own. Yeah, like I have individuals telling me that they don't want a niche because they don't want people to have to do something after they are not there anymore. There are some people who just want to have a sea burial because they just want to go back to dust. Like there's no physical way to really remember them and it's what they wanted. Some people don't even want a funeral.
Yeah, so common lately. Yeah, I don't want a funeral. But what's your take about people who don't want a funeral? You probably have conversations sometimes with the patients.
I think my views are going to stay my own. I mean, I can't speak for them because there's really a myriad of
reasons.
Right? Reasons behind. Some of it, it's more easily accessible. Some of it, it's not so accessible. But I also feel that being able to have this choice of not having your funeral wake itself, it's quite a powerful way to empower yourself. Because it almost feels like that's the last ritual or last ceremony that you get to decide for yourself.
Yeah. In fact, there are, I mean, you know, people who don't have a wake, but they usually have a service. Like in other countries, it's quite common where they only have 2 hours of service or 1 hour of service. But before that service comes up, maybe over the weekend, family members can have some private time to spend with their loved ones. And I did ask those countries that is practicing this now, what were their practice back then? And they said they used to do wakes, like a few days of wakes as well. So maybe Singapore will eventually, you know, move into this area. But I have spoken at quite a few seminars and a lot of them said, we need time, you know. And they were like, oh, we need time to say goodbye. So they prefer at least a 3 days funeral wake. So when we plan for the funeral, I always want to mention that it's not just only for the patient, but also the survivors. What do they need to be able to make sense or come to terms or to give them time to at least breathe and grieve and have that appropriate space for them as well. Yeah. So, I mean, because for you, Kelvin, you then reached out to us and then you said, I wanted to do pre-planning. So a lot of you may not know, but Kelvin has already prepared everything.
And, almost, I think.
Yeah, almost. And maybe the painting, yeah, if there's anything about the painting you would like to, you know, display. But you mentioned just now through your work, you get, you know, sometimes it teaches you how to live your life. Have you ever, what is the most, patients that you remember most and that had impacted you?
There's actually quite a few. Like, even when we are just having the earlier conversation about the number of days in a week, I think this is also a very Chinese customary thing. Because working in a hospice, I get exposed to people from different denominations, different faith backgrounds, different socioeconomic backgrounds. So I've also learned about how different faith, people from different faith groups send their loved ones off. Like coffin is only common for Chinese.
Yeah.
And maybe some Indian
Hindus,
cultures. Yeah. For Muslims, they don't. They don't have coffin. They also, the family also come together within a day to really prepare the body to spend time and then within the same day bury. So I think also being aware and open about all these things that's constantly going on is also a way to learn and really think about what do I want for myself.
Yeah. So, I mean, those inspired you to think about, because for me, I have the same, you know, when I meet families, and it really helped me to live life and live life to the fullest, really to, what if today is my last day? You know, who are the people I want to say sorry to? Who are the people I want to say thanks to? So every time at the end of the day, I always constantly use those four phrases, golden three words, you know. I'm sorry, I forgive you, I thank you, and I love you. So I remember this four phrases came from palliative care. That was the first time I was, the first time I remember it was a postcard. I still kept it. And I was like, oh my God, such powerful words. But how often do we say it to our loved ones? And it, there has been a rise, because we were talking about this earlier, that younger people suddenly fall ill or pass away. Mm. And it's just very common. And scaries, it scares me as a funeral director, because recently there was a young chap that we took care, and he was just on the way to go and fetch the child, the children. Mm. And then the next thing you know, he collapsed. And once he reached the hospital, he's gone. So it really sets you back. And then when I saw the children and the wife, and then it just hits you. It's like, oh my God, yeah. And that's why I've been encouraging people, yeah, we need to talk about this, normalizing the conversation of death, right? But how's your conversation with that? Because sometimes it must be difficult for you at work.
With normalizing conversations about death with people that I journey with, I think it's never
easy.
It's not like you've worked so many number of years, it gets any easier, because every conversation, it's probably going to be one of the first few you will be having with a person. Mm. And how every person reacts is going to be entirely different. So it's a lot about being there with them. Sometimes just acknowledging the fear of not knowing where we are going together.
Mm.
Even though I am a Christian by faith, but it's also important to recognize that there are many, many things that I don't understand about other faith group and how I can actually help them to journey in their own journey.
Mm.
And sometimes recognizing that also helps me to learn about human suffering in a way that I would never be able to imagine myself being able to learn.
Yeah.
So through that, you also will be able to harness different values, like how people show each one another care and concern. Because I remember a conversation with a curator, a Korean curator, who's actually very curious about doing an art project on physical death. So she was asking me about this, how do I cope with all these emotions at work? You know, is it actually very sad or heavy? So I was just literally, without much thought, I was just telling her, actually, there's a lot of love you can actually witness. Even in the most stubborn situation, that they insist on certain things being done for their family member, it can also be probably the only thing that they know. How to continue this level of care, and hence the insistence. Of course, it's never going to be easy, especially your nursing and nursing colleagues and those that are on the front line. But I think as a team, we do try to support one another to recognize that sometimes these are different portrayal of love. I mean, essentially, when they are grieving, it can also transmit to love that has nowhere else to go. I mean, the loved one is no longer responding the way they are. There's so much alteration that has happened, both physically and mentally, and even within the family construct. And sometimes what we can do is really just be with them in their experience and to play a very supportive role, because that could be what they need. Even being there in silence, sometimes silence can be a very, very therapeutic tool.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I love that.
I mean, there's just so much that we can talk about, like, the whole day.
Yeah, I know. It's a conversation with Kelvin. I learned so much. And it's also, I could see, like, you know, tears are also welling up in your eyes at times. Has there ever been a case, a very challenging one, where you empathize and you also get yourself into that state?
Difficult case. I do remember this lady that I was journeying with. It's more because she is of the same faith tradition as I am.
Mm.
And a lot of time it's her trying to come to terms with her prognosis.
Mm.
Because she has seen a lot of things happen beyond reason. For example, her healing, where she worships and in her church, but having this terminal diagnosis, how is she able to accept that she's going to die when she has seen so many people get healed?
Oh.
So that journey itself was not an easy one, but you can actually witness. I did a case on this for one of the healthcare conference in 2021. Before, so it's actually, even when I was reflecting on putting the case together with the patient's permission before she passes on, it was really about learning from all these encounters about the need to really attend to her person. So sometimes the session would start with, because she's just feeling so distressed, to just give her space to pray. To just really spend time with her spirit woman before we actually proceed even for art making. And some of these art making sessions, the themes that really come up is things that she always wanted to do when she was younger, but she got no chance.
Oh, wow.
And then as she was doing this, then there will be this oscillation, possibly her own meaning making or grief process going on, where she is contemplating, you know, if she gets well, what she's going to do next. And also toying with the idea that, you know, if she don't get well, then she will go to heaven. So that also reminded me, it's important just to provide that space for her to do just that. And as we journey on, there were episodes of anger towards the medical team because medication just won't work anymore. There was anger towards not being able to leave the hospice because she has been there for, she did outlive her prognosis just for a while, but even that itself, given the complexity of her disease, her being with us is already a miracle. So I think as much as the team tried to also support her and let her know about that, there was also the inner person trying to make sense of everything. So, long story short, towards the end, she did come to relatively acceptable terms with her eventual demise. The work that she did was actually a very scaled down dining set that has a dining table with a lot of food and four chairs. So I was having this conversation with her, who will be at this table? So she was just telling me, you know, it's going to be her and the Holy Trinity. So she is expecting herself to be dining with the Holy Trinity, and the scripture that she cites was Psalms 23.
Oh, wow.
So on her end, she even gave me instructions to pass this completed work, which we actually framed up in an acrylic box to her pastor. So it became a gift. So towards the end, there was this level of resolution. But prior to that, it's also very important to really just journey and understand this suffering and meaning-making. Because sometimes it, in the middle of it, I also don't understand why there's so much frustration. But I think in retrospect, everything else makes sense. So it's important that the team continue to talk to one another, because we are just all trying to make sense of what is happening to her and how can we continue to support her.
Wow.
Only until the end, then it makes sense.
Yeah.
So this kind of work, one person
You see, exactly. I mean, it's not just the hard work, but so many times I see palliative care, whether is it therapist or social worker, you know, when even when it comes to the eventual demise, they will still shed tears, especially when they come up to the podium to share eulogy. So that's why I love what we do together, because when I sit together, even after, you know, the patient has passed away, we do encourage the therapists or even the doctors or nurses who has been caring for the patient to actually share a eulogy. Because a lot of times I find that they will tell you things that they may not tell the family members. And then usually the nurses will then share some stories that the family will be like, oh wow, we didn't know that. Right. So they really play a very important role. And I'm always curious because you have been in this space for so long. And this question has been presented to me before. So I would like to present to you. And the question is, Kelvin, if you have a choice today, would you choose to know when your expiration date is? Or would you choose to just pass away, you know, in the sleep?
I think no need to know.
No need to know.
No need to know.
So you'd rather not have like a expiration date, then you know that, okay, I'm going to roughly know.
I mean, it's not for me to know. I like to believe it's not for me to know, because if I know, then I will live my life very differently with that point as focus.
I see.
Because that's the point of focus, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When I will expire. If I don't know, then this very moment that we have is something that I'm living in and living with.
I see.
The next moment when I'm with my loved ones, that will be the moment that I'm there and with. My mind will not be fixated on when I'm going to go or how much time I have left. But just being here now with them, I think that itself is what keeps me going.
See, that's where we have the saying, live in the moment, right? Living in the moment, living in the present. Best is do not use your phone when you are with your family members and really be present with them, because the reason why I ask this is there are people who always ask me, if today you have a choice, would you prefer to know when you are expiring or would you prefer to pass away in the sleep? And a lot of times people tell me, oh, I prefer to pass away in the sleep. And then I ask, the next question I ask is, then did you pre-plan everything? Did you prepare everything? Then I said, then you need to be like Kelvin, you know, where he plans everything and family members will know, oh, wow, you already helped to plan everything. Because a lot of times we face that where the challenge part, and even for us in funeral, we do see a lot of conflicts at times between family members. And we also have to facilitate the conversation. Maybe one particular family members would like to do this. And I like when you share about, you know, they are going through grief, the journey. Every family members are journeying through this grief process differently. Some may be angry, some may be in denial, some may be guilty. They didn't do certain things. So, you know, how do we then come together as an eco-service or eco-team to help them make sense of it? Because it's not easy. At times, it's also challenging. And I think the part where patients go to you, they were given a chance to really make amends for all the things that they have not said, to sort of like live life with no regrets. And then if there's any things that they want to say to the parents. I came across this family before, mom and the daughter. The daughter was very angry with the mother for giving her illness. So they don't speak. And the mom is constantly seeking for her forgiveness. And because of the work of the palliative care group, they facilitated the conversation a few hours before she passed. And she actually told the mother she forgave her. And then, yeah, so, and oh, I'm getting my, every time I think about her, I was like, wow. And I'm very grateful. And I said, wow, I mean, thank God, you're like a godsend, you know, angel. Yeah, and I think that's the strength that all of you do. And yeah, and maybe I will ask the final question. I know that we have to move on to the next interview later. So Kelvin, I mean, you already pre-plan, and if there is something that you would like to leave behind, a message, what would be the message or how people would remember Kelvin? Or what's written? You don't want a tombstone, I know, but what would be written in your eulogy?
Yes. I clearly haven't thought about this. Give me a while.
Sure. Or even like message, because I think you said something just now through the work that you do. What is some advice you would like to give to the listeners?
I think maybe if something along the line that he lived learning how to die.
He lived learning how to die. Wow.
Because I think
that sums you up.
If you think about it, we are dying a little each day. I mean, life is finite. In Singapore, we don't see it often, but if you grow up in a country. Not that I do, but if you grow up in a country where there are seasons, it's change in seasons that can actually be felt and visibly noticed, then you will realize actually things do change. I mean, over here it's rain or shine, but sometimes if we really take notice, the falling leaves, even without the change of seasons, would remind you that things do change, things do fall to the ground, things do return to dust. If we look at the analog clock, because we don't anymore, the second hand constantly moves.
That's true.
In a very mechanical way.
Yeah.
That is very impersonal. But at the same time, we are experiencing this ticking in many layers. Because each tick itself means many layers in our lived experience. But a lot of time, we don't really sit down and think about as it ticks. You know, which level am I engaging this second, this moment with?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so essentially, I do think we are fading away every day. It's either fast or slow. So, yeah, I mean, I hope that helps.
That's amazing. You know, a man who lived his life by learning how to die. I think the even that concept of the clock ticking, I always encourage people to, you know, sort of understand there's something called the law of impermanence. Really, nothing is permanent. Just like you say, things are constantly changing. And then, what a great example with the second hand. I never think of it that way, but now I look at clocks differently. Yeah, look at that. With that, thank you so much, Kelvin. Really, really appreciate your time and keep up the great work. I really, really salute to all this palliative care, healthcare personnel, be it personnel in the therapy, or doctors, nurses, you really have to have that kind of space, the whole space for patients and also for the family members, and really, really salute to you.
Teamwork. Thank
you. Teamwork. So now you know, palliative care is not a place to go and die. I think there's a lot of times where people say, oh, chinapien, you know, I will die immediately. It's really a team of people who will give you that comfort and then to help you do pain management. Yeah.
And yeah, quality of life.
Yeah,
so
quality of life.
Really spend a lot more time with, or spend time the way you want.
Yeah, the way you want it. Yeah. Oh, I love that. And thank you so much. And this is episode of Dying to Meet You, and we will see you next time.